Hello, dear listener, and welcome to Marriage, the Godly Institution podcast. My name is Joy, and I'm also the author of the book, Marriage, the Godly Institution. Through this podcast, I'm bringing you the content of my book. Each episode will cover a new chapter. I hope you will like it. In today's episode, we shall look at chapter 1 entitled, Marriage is a Covenant. When marriage is mentioned, many things come to mind, such as a wedding, children, building a house, giving of dowry, sexual intimacy, growing old, among others. What exactly is marriage? Marriage is an everlasting union between a man and a woman that makes them one flesh. Genesis 2:24 says, "Therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh." Malachi, when talking about marriage, brings in the concept of vows and a wife by covenant. Malachi 2:14 says, "Yet you say, for what reason? Because the Lord has been witness between you and the wife of your youth, with whom you have dealt treacherously. Yet she is your companion and your wife by covenant." Before looking at the relationship between a covenant and marriage, let us first understand what a covenant is all about. Many people relate a covenant with ungodly things like murder, shedding of blood, cults, among others. What is a covenant? A covenant is an agreement between two people. This agreement involves swearing, making vows, and staying committed to the vows that have been made. Where there is a covenant, blood is involved, for there is no covenant without blood. A covenant can be godly or satanic. A covenant, whether godly or satanic, has four elements, which are 1. Blood. When a covenant is made, blood is sprinkled on the ground, altar, or in the people being initiated to it. Some people lick or even drink blood, which could be from human beings or animals. In most traditional ceremonies, animals are slaughtered. The slaughtering of animals is not just for people to enjoy the meat, but blood is required. Number 2, a priest. A priest conducts a covenant as well, which can be godly or satanic depending on what type of priest he is. In traditional ceremonies, we refer to them as elders. Number 3, spoken words. These are the words declared by the priest during the covenant initiation process. And number 4, an oath or vow. These are the words spoken by the people being initiated into the covenant. The responsibility of those being initiated into the covenant is to obey the agreement and stay committed to the vows. Breaking a covenant or failing to stay committed to the vows is dangerous and can even lead to death. For example, if two people plan to steal from a bank and agree that everything will be kept confidential and the amount they steal should be shared equally, if either party discovers that the other partner has violated the terms and conditions, he will plan for the unfaithful partner's death so that he can be saved. A covenant is not something that one gets in and out without understanding. Marriage is a covenant. It is a union between a man and a woman that makes them one flesh. The man and woman are mostly united in a ceremony. It can be a traditional or church ceremony. The two are joined together by a pastor or priest. The priest declares some words from the Bible as he joins them. During this process, the man and the woman make vows personally. Once they are declared a husband and a wife, they engage in sexual intimacy to make them one flesh. The most crucial item in a marriage ceremony is not food, bridal gown, cake, gifts, or even entertainment, but the covenant initiation process. Walking out of the covenant of marriage or failing to remain faithful to marriage vows is dangerous. It creates animosity and can even lead to death. One cannot enter another marriage covenant before dissolving the previous one. Dissolving a marriage covenant is next to impossible. One will need to call relatives and friends. The priest will not accept to cancel the covenant because he knows that what God has put together, no one should put asunder. How do you separate a body that has already become one flesh through sexual intimacy? The spoken words by the priest and vows made by the husband and the wife remain active. Dissolving a marriage covenant is not easy. One may say it is possible through the court. Yes, the court will give you divorce papers to sign, but the covenant remains and will trouble you everywhere you go. This is why God hates divorce. People need to understand what marriage is all about before they start thinking of getting married. Parents, before we start pushing our children to get married, let us understand marriage and help our children understand it too. Marriage is not a joke. It is a covenant and meant for mature people. Let us understand that when marriage vows are not kept, there will be consequences. Therefore, marriage is a gate for a good life or a bad life. One will live a good, happy life when he or she gets married with understanding. Life will be a nightmare for anyone who gets married for the sake of it. Once we enter the marriage institution's gate, the gate is closed by the Holy Spirit and the key is thrown away. No going out. So who initiated marriage? God brought all the animals to Adam for naming after he finished his creation. The naming exercise was an excellent test for Adam from God. Success in this exercise was to qualify him for the next level of naming the helpmate God would give him. Adam passed the test, but he remained a tired and lonely man because out of all the animals he had named, he found none that suited him. God made him fall into a deep sleep. At the same time, asleep, God took from him one of his ribs and made a helpmate from it for Adam. When Adam woke up from sleep, God presented to him the helpmate. Adam was excited and called the new creature bone of his bones and flesh of his flesh and named her a woman. God then declared that a man was to leave his father and mother and join his wife to become one flesh. That is found in Genesis 2:18-21. God is the author of marriage and honors marriage. He sent the prophet Malachi to the children of Israel, especially the Israelite men who had the habit of divorcing their Jewish wives. The Israelite men were urged to understand that God was and is the witness when marriage vows were and are being made. Anyone who breaks the marriage vows was not expected to get blessings from God. Malachi 2:14 says, "Yet you say, for what reason? Because the Lord has been witness between you and the wife of your youth, with whom you have dealt treacherously, yet she is your companion and your wife by covenant." Having understood that God is the author of marriage and honors marriage, we now know that three people make the institution of marriage. Why did God initiate marriage? People get married for different reasons. Some get married because they are old. It is a requirement to get married to please their parents, for companionship, for sexual satisfaction, to have children, to get someone to help in paying the bills, among others. Let us look at the reasons God had for initiating marriage. Number one, procreation. Genesis 2:18 is specific. It talks about a man not living alone and not a woman. Does that mean a woman can stay alone? Let us find out. A man carries a seed. This seed needs to be planted so that it can grow and multiply into many generations. This seed is meant to accomplish God's purpose on earth. This seed comprises of different types of people: presidents, doctors, prophets, apostles, and people with the spirit of wisdom in all manner of workmanship, among others. Unless this seed is planted, it remains of no value. However, it has to be planted in the proper soil according to the will of God. The womb of a woman was created to receive the seed and release it after 9 months. Every seed has a womb ordained for it by God. There is a possibility that many seeds might have been nurtured in the wrong wombs. Fathers and mothers are significant people because fathers carry the seed and mothers receive and release the seed once it is mature. Proverbs 23:22 says, "Listen to your father who gave you life, and do not despise your mother when she is old." One of the reasons God initiated marriage was for procreation. Genesis 1:27-28 says, "So God created man in his image. In the image of God, he created him, male and female. He created them. Then God blessed them, and God said to them, 'Be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth.'" God's creation could not be taken care of by man only. Adam needed to be fruitful and multiply to get people to help him with a job. Number two, for support. Adam needed a helper. After God had created all the animals, he brought them all to Adam for naming. Adam succeeded in this naming exercise, though the exercise was tedious. Supposing Adam had a helper, the job would have been a lot easier. Adam was given dominion over every living thing that moved on the earth. In marriage, a lot of responsibility has been given to the man. A man is the head of the family, a father, and a husband. In case anything wrong happens in the family, God will not ask the woman, but the man. God, the Father, is the head over Jesus. Jesus is the head of a man, and a man is a ruler over a woman. 1 Corinthians 11:3 says, "But I want you to realize that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of the woman is man, and the head of Christ is God." A man needs physical, social, spiritual, and psychological support from his wife. Our bodies are the temples of the Holy Spirit. A man's body needs to be taken care of. With the help of a woman, a man will eat healthily, dress well, and keep his body clean. A man needs someone he can open to and share his challenges with. He needs encouragement and prayer so that he remains physically and spiritually strong. The great and successful men we hear and see in this world get their great support from God and the prudent wives in their lives. Ecclesiastes 4:9-10 says, "Two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. If either of them falls, one can help the other. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them up." Number three, companionship. Human beings have a sense of belongingness. We cannot operate on our own. We need each other. God also does not operate alone. God works with Jesus the Son and the Holy Spirit. In marriage, a man and a woman need each other. Life is full of ups and downs, and they need to share their feelings to avoid stress. No one in this world is perfect. We learn from each other. A man and a woman have their strengths and weaknesses. They need to accept each other and learn from one another. Proverbs 27:17 says, "As iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of his friend." After a hard day's work, one needs to relax and enjoy it. The best person to relax with is the partner. God has promised us that we shall eat the good of this land if we walk in obedience. We need to enjoy this best with our partners. Ecclesiastes 9:9 says, "Enjoy life with your wife, whom you love, all the days of this meaningless life that God has given you under the sun. All your meaningless days, for this is your lot in life and in your toilsome labor under the sun." Number 4, sexual satisfaction. God knew that the sexual need of a man is as necessary as his other needs, such as food, shelter, clothing, and fellowshipping with others. After Adam had named all the animals, he did not find any animal that was suitable for him. Genesis 2:20 says, "So the man gave names to all the livestock, the birds in the sky, and all wild animals. But for Adam, no suitable helper was found." This means no animal was suitable to satisfy the sexual need of Adam. Therefore, God had to look for a suitable partner for him. Earlier, we said one of the reasons God initiated marriage was for procreation. God was not only interested in one multiplying and filling the earth, but also in godly offspring. Malachi 2:15 says, "Has not the one God made you? You belong to him in body and spirit. And what does the one God seek? Godly offspring. So be on your guard and do not be unfaithful to the wife of your youth." Adam and an animal could not produce a godly offspring. A suitable partner for him was made. God did not want Adam to engage in sexual immorality because he dislikes sexual immorality. Sexual immorality not only defiles our physical bodies, but our spiritual bodies as well. God's plan was for a husband to have his wife and a wife to have his husband. 1 Corinthians 7:2 says, "But because of the temptation to sexual immorality, each man should have his wife and each woman her husband." Sexual immorality produces ungodly offspring. Any child brought into this world as a result of unfaithfulness in marriage is ungodly offspring in the eyes of God. When David committed adultery with Bathsheba, she had a baby who later became sick. David fasted and prayed for the healing of this baby, but unfortunately, the baby died. David got into Bathsheba and God blessed them with a baby called Solomon. The baby that died was born out of adultery. When Uriah died, David married Bathsheba, and the baby they had was acceptable now in the eyes of God. I'll read for you. "After Nathan had gone home, the Lord struck the child that Uriah's wife had born to David, and he became ill. David pleaded with God for the child. He fasted and spent the nights lying in sackcloth on the ground. The elders of his household stood beside him to get him up from the ground, but he refused, and he would not eat any food with them. On the seventh day, the child died. David's attendants were afraid to tell him that the child was dead, for they thought, while the child was still living, he wouldn't listen to us when we spoke to him. How can we now tell him the child is dead? He may do something desperate." That is found in 2 Samuel 12:15-18. 2 Samuel 12:24-25 says, "Then David comforted his wife Bathsheba, and he went to her and made love to her. She gave birth to a son, and they named him Solomon. The Lord loved him, and because the Lord loved him, he sent word through Nathan the prophet to name him Jedidah." Before Isaac was born, Abraham committed adultery with Hagar, his slave girl, and he got a baby called Ishmael. When Isaac was later born, there was no peace in Abraham's house, and Sarah demanded that Hagar leaves out of their home with her son. It was a frustrating moment for Abraham because Ishmael was his son. But God commanded Abraham to do as Sarah had commanded her. This is found in Genesis 21:8-12. It says, "The child grew and was weaned, and on the day Isaac was weaned, Abraham held a great feast. But Sarah saw that the son whom Hagar the Egyptian had born to Abraham was mocking, and she said to Abraham, 'Get rid of that slave woman and her son, for that woman's son will never share in the inheritance with my son Isaac.' The matter distressed Abraham greatly because it concerned his son. But God said to him, 'Do not be distressed about the boy and your slave woman. Listen to what Sarah tells you, because it is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned.'" Those of us in marriage, let us practice purity and avoid sexual immorality. Those waiting to get married, practice self-control until God gives you the right partner. God is interested in a godly offspring and generation thereafter. I hope you enjoyed this chapter of my book. If you found it helpful, send me a message and please let me know. In our next episode, we shall look at pillars of marriage. Thanks for listening.